Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
We're running out of time to get this all figured out, both on today's show and, according to some, in our global dream of a world economy in exchange and goods and stuff unlimited. So when we return, we move quickly into the future and find out what nature tells us about life on Earth. Wait, nature is life on Earth, and, well, we are nature as well. Maybe it's time we realign our visions of what we are and where we are in our own evolution of existence. So hang on as we continue with your Voice of the Earth here on the Wildside News. Can nature reach up and talk to us? Or do we reach inward to talk with our nature? We try to find out as we continue our discussions with Dr. Elizabeth Satoris.
You know, what I have discovered in looking at evolution and in questioning the Darwinian theory, where is it right, where does it not go far enough, I came to two concepts that really helped me to understand the evolutionary process. One of them is a very simple concept that comes from Arthur Koestler, the philosopher, and for those listeners who have read Ken Wilber, you'll know that he also adopted this idea of holons and holarchy, where a holon is just any living entity, and holarchy is that living entity's embeddedness within other levels. For example, the holarchy of your body would be molecules within cells, within organ systems, within the whole body, or an individual within a family, within a community, within an ecosystem, within a nation, within a world. This is a very important and very useful concept that living systems are always embedded within other living systems. So let's think holons and holarchy. And then the other concept is one of a maturation cycle in evolution, which is kind of like the maturation cycle that we go through as individuals, where we first, there's a unity of mother and baby, and then you individuate from the mother, and you go through childhood and into a kind of feisty, competitive adolescence, and eventually we learn to cooperate with each other as mature adults, at least we hope so. And that makes life work for us as social creatures. Now, the way I see this in nature is that young, immature species are the kind of species ecologists say populate type 1 ecosystems. They take as much territory as they can get, they reproduce as fast as possible, and therefore use up as many resources as possible to establish and perpetuate themselves. They're very competitive in this process if they meet other species. Now, that's the part Darwin told us about. However, if they don't kill each other off at that stage, I believe they go on into a mature cooperative phase, which is what ecologists will tell you the species are like in a type 3 ecosystem. They ensure the life of other species by contributing something to them. They're very cooperative in their sharing of resources and territory. These are ecosystems like rainforests and prairies, very well-evolved ecosystems. Now, interestingly, while ecologists talk about these type 1 and type 3 ecosystems, and they'll tell you type 2s are transitional, with perhaps some of each of those kinds of species in them, they do not see this as a maturation cycle. But I ask myself, where do those cooperative species come from? They didn't seem to be there to start with. There's something about these two ways of behaving that we humans can anthropomorphize about and identify as being our own phases of maturation. And when you see things that way, you understand why in nature you can point to both cooperation and competition and see them in a unified theory. You know, Darwin knew there was cooperation going on in nature, but the unification theory is seeing it as a maturation cycle. Now, once you see that, then you can go back through evolution and say, okay, how did this play itself out in some of the important evolutionary events? And to me, the most important one is the invention of the nucleated cell. There are only two kinds of cells on this planet. There are bacterial cells, which occupied the Earth for half of its life with no other kind of cell around. And then somewhere around the middle of Earth's life, the bacteria formed nucleated cells, thousands of times bigger than bacteria, as colonies. Now, originally, in their hostile competitive mode, the bacteria were very like us humans in colonizing each other, different kinds of bacteria, so that high-tech fast bacteria would drill into low-tech sluggish bacteria and literally consume their molecules from the inside in a very colonial kind of process. But somewhere along the way, the bacteria, which had diversified into a number of different lifestyles, discovered that feeding each other was economically more efficient and better for everybody concerned than the hostile competition. And so they formed huge communities, and each gave up some of their DNA to this central library I call the nucleus, and we had a second kind of cell on the planet, a nucleated cell. And everything else that evolved after that is made of these nucleated cells. It never had to be redesigned again after that invention. So there was the maturation process. You had the bacteria individuating from a uniform Earth's crust, and then you had them going through the juvenile phase of the competition that got pretty hostile sometimes, and they developed a lot of technologies in the process, including things we've invented. I call their invention of the first World Wide Web their exchange of DNA among each other. And to this day, all bacteria can trade DNA with each other on this planet. And they invented photosynthesis, meaning they harnessed solar energy when they had eaten up all the free food. They harnessed solar energy and made their own food out of what was left, which was minerals, sunlight, and water. And then they went on to invent nuclear piles, probably to keep warm. And they invented the electric motor, which is of great interest now to the nanotechnologists. That's what made some of them high-tech bacteria. So it's just fascinating to see how much we are repeating things that were learned at the micro level about 2 billion years ago. And that's it now. We've got the concept of holarchy and the concept of the maturation cycle. And then there's something else very interesting about that. When you put those two concepts together, you see something very interesting. Think of the holarchy of your body, which I described as cells within organs, within organ systems, within the whole body. And now imagine that that cycle is being continually played out in the eternal now, because every level of holarchy in your body has to be able to express its self-interest in order to function. And that means that there are some conflicts that develop among the different levels, so that you have to have constant negotiations going on between, say, an organ and its component cells, so that the organ can meet its self-interest and the individual cells can meet their self-interest. So that dynamic goes on and pushes cooperation. Somehow the system knows that everything in it has to be healthy for the system as a whole to be healthy. And that body wisdom, as it used to be called by physiologists, is something we need in the holarchy that goes through individual, family, community, ecosystem, world. Because it immediately tells you that your world economy can only be healthy if what's at the top, which is presently the World Trade Organization, recognizes the need to negotiate with and ensure the self-interest of every local economy in that system. Do you see how the two things connect together?
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So we have tools with this maturation cycle and the concept of holarchy to see exactly what works well in our world and what doesn't.
This kind of comes back to that East-West duality in the sense that what we're witnessing here, because no one talks about an Easternization process in terms of globalization, they talk about a Westernization process, which is actually sort of taking this concept of individualistic capitalism out to the point where virtually anybody who has the right enough money and power is able to dominate and control and take from other systems.
Yeah.
And this is the beginning of what you're talking about in terms of how do we then apply a more
equitable. Exactly.
Yeah. Bingo.
Yeah, we're thinking alike here.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, you know, the Soviet East tried to build a system on sacrificing individual interests to community self-interest or community interest. And the West was doing the opposite. It was sacrificing community to individual interest. So they both had half a system. The Soviet Union collapsed because it wasn't meeting self-interest, and human beings don't function very well if they can't meet their self-interest any more than the cells within them could function if they couldn't meet their self-interest. But you also get a system into trouble if you're sacrificing community self-interest. That would be like in the body, it's like a cancer where the individual cells meet their self-interest but do not any longer negotiate with the other levels of holarchy and therefore care only about their self-interest and not about the self-interest of the organ systems or the body. Mm-hmm. And so that's a dead end too.
Life stops at that point.
Life stops at that point.
Or it gets very, very miserable.
If you destroy your own ecosystem, then you can't live. If the cells destroy their body, then they can't live.
Well, you've... Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just saying that if we relate this to economics, it all becomes very clear that just as in a rainforest, species have discovered the cost effectiveness of ensuring the life of their fellow species, think of our world and how much better we would get along if we recognized that a tiny fraction of the Pentagon budget spent on developing those enemy countries would make friends of those people and give us markets.
Yes.
You know, it's just, to me, an insanity that you would spend huge amounts of wealth on destroying other cultures, other countries, than to make friends of them by developing them, which is what we're in the process of learning now.
There's so many ways in which nature can serve as a guide. For example, I like to think oftentimes about a forest and the fact that in a forest there are the grand trees, the grand old large trees that live and tower and dominate. But when they die, they fall, and then all that they were is redistributed back into that community. And without that system, in other words, if all trees that grew were to grow up and then be turned into stone, pretty soon there would be no more forest.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a very simple concept that perhaps, I mean, I'm just sort of free associating here, but perhaps one of the unnatural systems is the accumulation of wealth in ever more smaller groups of people. That could be something that just plain does not serve this living system very well.
No, it doesn't. And, of course, Arnold Toynbee, who investigated the demise of 23 previous civilizations, found two common features in that demise, one of which was the extreme concentration of wealth, and the other was a failure to change when change was really called for, you know, rigidity in societies. What I like to say about the distribution of wealth is that the economics we're playing out in the world today is really like a monopoly game. A monopoly game is about concentrating wealth in the hands of one of the players, right? And when you finish playing Monopoly, what do? You either redistribute the wealth or you go play something else. And I suggest we play something else in our world Monopoly game.
We just have a couple of minutes left. What are some of the games that you see as new games that may work?
Well, it's really, if you think in game theory, about moving to win-win games rather than win-lose games. And there are ways for everybody to win, and we can see that from this history of evolution. If we update the Darwinian theory to seeing the way species in nature learn to cooperate with each other in win-win situations, that's all we need to know to see how to build global family in our world.
Well, we could carry this conversation. We've barely touched the surface, but Elizabeth Satoris has many things to do, and I want to thank you so much, Elizabeth, for being adding your voice to the Wild Side News, and I look forward to communicating with you and keeping in touch.
You're more than welcome, Sydney.
Why don't you go ahead and give your website one more time, and also just what are your plans into the future? Where might people be able to find you, and what are some of your dreams?
Okay, well, I'm traveling around the world a lot, and I consult with some companies, and I teach in a sustainable business MBA program that people can find information about at the website of the Bainbridge Graduate Institute. If you just Google that, you'll find it. And my websites, again, are saturis.com, saturis.com, and radical, radical.org/lifeweb. So I'm continuing to write, to lecture around the world, to consult with businesses that want to become more like living systems and live in Southern California, and I'm having a wonderful life.
Thank you so much for sharing all that you are with my people and the world.
Thank you, Sydney.
So now you have a clear signal to put nature first, to attune yourself to your own observations of your world, your feelings, your nature, and the grand and amazing moment we share on our swirling, swirling little Earth. By the time we meet again, little planet Earth will have spun itself into circles 7 times. Which is about halfway through its annual journey around the sun, which too is swirling in a finger of the Milky Way, out amongst the family of galaxies that make up our little neighborhood in the hundreds of billions of galaxies that we use to imagine a limit that is limitless, or perhaps not, but then will we ever know really what this is all about? Now, go on out and live. This is Sydney Wildsmith, your host and producer of the Wild Side News, wishing you all a great helping of life until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives on your Voice of the Earth, the Wild Side News.